Welcome back to a new episode of the Best of Bettina podcast. Today we have a very special guest, one of the loveliest and most inspiring people I've ever known, my mentor Lucinda Bruce Gardine, who founded Genius Foods in the UK. How I first came to know Genius Foods is actually when I moved to Scotland for university. And being celiac, I was obviously trying to navigate my way to find good gluten-free products in a new country. And I came across Genius and I bought a loaf of their bread, and it was seriously the best bread I had tasted in so many years. And after a few years, I was actually lucky enough to meet Lucinda. And since a few years back, she's been one of my mentors and has been kind enough to offer her time to come and talk about her journey with Genius and how to look after yourself and your health while building a business. So Lucinda, welcome to the podcast and thanks for making the time. In your own words, would you like to tell our listeners first who you are and what Genius actually is?
Hello, Bettina. It's very kind of you to invite me onto your podcast today. My name is Lucinda Bruce Gardine, and I'm the founder of Genius Foods, which is the UK's leading brand in gluten-free bakery products. I started Genius Foods from my kitchen at home in 2006, as I, over a three-year period, developed and scaled the first soft, fresh, gluten-free bread on the market. And the reason I did this is because my son had been diagnosed at three with a serious gluten intolerance, and I was unable to find bread anywhere that tasted as bread should. And given that bread is a staple and we all rely on it heavily throughout the day, we were really struggling to live without it. So, you know, I could see that there was a howling gap in the market and decided, rather than to complain that I couldn't find bread, that actually I would try and develop something myself.
Wasn't it so that you actually had three small children at home while you were developing the product and the business?
Yes. So I was actively developing the bread really when I had a 5, 3, and 1-year-old at home. So it was really pretty difficult to find the time and the energy to develop the bread around them. But I basically did it while they slept. So, you know, it would be their morning naps. I would start baking, but it would also be late into the night. So we'd get them to bed, quickly eat, and then I would work until about midnight or beyond most nights. So it was an extremely exhausting period of my life because the children would all be waking up at 5 following morning.
Yeah, that must have been so tough. I mean, obviously, I don't have any children of my own, so I can't relate, but I can only imagine.
Yes, children are exhausting. I think probably the biggest challenge of having children really is dealing with the tiredness that you have, because, you know, they get up so early. They get up so early every single morning, and they wake you up in the night, and they create a lot of chaos. And so there's a lot of sort of running about. There isn't a huge amount of time to rest. And so when you overlay that with developing a pioneering product, then really there was no time really other than looking after the children and working on the bread. So we lived in a reasonable level of chaos in the house, but my husband is exceptionally long suffering, and he could see the value of what I was trying to create.
How did you then look after yourself or rest in all this chaos?
I think I was energized really and totally motivated by the intellectual challenge of creating the structure of bread really without gluten. So basically I powered through because of this urgent need. I just felt this really urgent need to sort this problem out, but also to try and understand how to do it. It was really, really fascinating. And it was going to make such a difference to us, but it didn't leave really any window for necessarily looking after myself. I mean, it was family and bread, and that was about it.
Well, what about today when the business is I'm sure it's still a lot of work and a lot of kind of fires to put out, but still in a way a little bit more stable and established. How do you look after yourself now, or have you found kind of more time to maybe prioritize rest and have a better work-life balance now?
I think I realized sort of quite early on. So once we were working towards the launch of the bread, so maybe it's worth just talking about that for a second, that you know, I'd been through this incredibly intense development period in my kitchen at home. And then that was then followed by a really, I mean, even more intense period where I was scaling my kitchen recipes in a bakery sort of 40 minutes down the road from where I live in Edinburgh through the night. The hours I was keeping were really very difficult. It was quite hard to keep going. And we went on a holiday and I realized I was actually getting very ill. I had a really bad chest infection. And I spent the first 4 days of the holiday, it was literally a week's holiday, and I spent the first 4 days in bed, really worried that I was going down with pneumonia. I thought I was about to be really ill. And that was a real wake-up call to me. I think I've always been naturally very healthy and I've always had a very high energy level. But that was a real wake-up call that actually I had to look after myself. And so after that, I tried really hard as well not to get really excited when things were going well, or really low when things weren't going well, you know, rather than living on this sort of roller coaster of emotions. And really, to a degree, on my nerves, because the whole thing was really quite nerve-wracking. I tried to just turn my energy down a bit and just stay more constant, keep my mood constant, to avoid the highs and lows, because I knew that wasn't doing me any good. So that was something I changed quite early on. I also realized that exercise was really important. So I started running. I'd never really been a runner, but a couple of years into Genius, where it was extremely intense, I started running every day, and I found just that time away from everything was a really, really good time to think through things, and I would think much more clearly. Really, by the end of the run, I was feeling much better. And I think the other thing I've always felt really strongly about is eating well, eating as well as you can, eating as much freshly prepared food, you know, healthy, lots of fruit and veg food, as much as you can, because I think when you are working in a very full-on way, you have to feed your body, you have to nourish yourself. And then also trying to get enough sleep. You know, I do need really seven hours of sleep a night. Eight is ideal.
Have you ever been close to burning out, do you think?
So I think that time when I was on holiday, I was really close to burning out. There have been other times where everything has been so full on for such a long time. You know, I've been away from home a lot, traveling a lot, you know, keeping really, really long hours for weeks on end. I've realized a number of times that I simply don't care about the business anymore, that you just become completely satiated with what you're doing, that the fun and the joy disappears because you're so tired. And again, it's really important to recognize when that's about to happen and make it really clear to people that you are absolutely exhausted, that the schedule needs to change for the next few weeks to recoup the energy to then get going again. So again, I think I'm much better now managing my schedule and not overstretching myself.
Yeah, that's really good of kind of like voicing it out to the people around you, and that kind of realizing that it's not anything to be ashamed of, or it's not a weakness. I mean, it kind of just shows that you've been so passionate about your business, that you've been working so hard on it, that now you've reached this point. But what concrete examples can you give that you maybe do to kind of recoup the energy? Is it just resting in bed, or is there anything specific that you do to kind of gain your energy back?
I try and listen to my body. So, you know, when I have been really tired, you know, I've got home on a Friday night, finally, I mean, it might be quite late on a Friday night, actually feeling ill, you know, and Saturdays quite often through the really intensive years. Really, the first 10 years of the business have been exceptionally intense, and quite often I would feel ill on a Saturday and I would just have to give into it and just not expect too much of myself, just have a lie in, get a really decent sleep on the Saturday morning, and then just take it really easy. Maybe even go back to bed and have a sleep in the afternoon on you know, that day as well. And then really by Saturday evening or Sunday morning, I would be feeling, you know, a lot more human again and able to enjoy the rest of the weekend. And I'm not necessarily feeling very proud of that, but yeah, I suppose that's how exhausted I was. And being outside, getting out into the fresh air is a really important thing to do when you're tired. It's like the last thing you feel like doing, but actually going for a walk with the family, somewhere green, somewhere near water, you know, and breathing in that fresh air and getting some UV rays, I think is exactly what you must do when you're working really hard.
Yeah. Do you have a particular morning or evening routine to kind of in the morning start the day right, or in the evening wind down from the day?
So most mornings I run. So, you know, I literally get up and go running, and I always run in quiet places. I try to get away from traffic. And in fact, Edinburgh, I'm blessed in Edinburgh, really, because there are lots of really lovely places to run, lots of parks and rivers and things. So that's easy. So I'll go and have an hour of running, because I feel I need an hour. I only get the sort of the calming benefits and the time to think running for an hour. And I never listen to music. I like to listen to the nature around me. And then I get back and have a really long shower and far too much coffee. And then,
no such thing.
And a really healthy breakfast. I like to have a breakfast that really sets me up. So I'll have natural Greek yogurt and fruit and nuts. And I find that really sets me up. Because back to that, you know, eating what suits your body, eating simple, good food that hasn't been played around with too much, I think is really important.
Yeah. Did you ever think that you would start a business before you actually started? Or could you actually like picture this moment?
I come from a family of entrepreneurs, so it's in the blood. And it just feels natural, really, to create my own work rather than work for other people. I like to feel really passionate about my work. I work very hard. I'm very happy to give lots of time to my work, but I have to feel really passionate about it. And I figure that if I've created something myself, I probably will feel more passionate than if I go and work for someone else. So I'd always sort of thought that I would run my own business. I ran a catering company not that long after leaving university. For 4 years, and that was a very good start, really, to sort of understanding what it took to create a business yourself. I wanted to always do something that was going to do good in some way, because I toyed with being a doctor when I was younger. I've always been very interested in health and in food. I come from a very foodie family, and I knew I wanted to do something that was actually really useful. And so I suppose when my son came along with his gluten intolerance, and my eldest son is severely allergic to dairy products, I realised that that was probably an area that I could really make a difference in, because of my background as a chef and as a scientist. I could see that this was actually an area that I could really create a niche in. And it is important, I think, when you're wanting to run your own business, that you create your own niche, that you are better than average in that particular area. And when you're better than average, people listen and people are persuaded to invest in you.
What else do you think has helped you in starting up the business, apart from your experience with your catering company before?
Well, I think my family background has given me the sort of belief that I can set something up, because they did. you know, my father's family were Jewish immigrants from Germany and then Holland, and they came to the UK in the 1840s with nothing. And they built big, big businesses, really against every odd in the book. And I think that background has given me the sort of strength and the belief that maybe I can give it a go myself. I think you also have to have the belief that you can survive working really long hours and really hard. I think a lot of people worry about starting a business because they just don't know they've got the energy levels to do it. Well, when I left university, I went to Leeds School of Food and Wine, which is a cookery school in London. And after that, I then worked at Bibendum, which at the time was a Michelin star restaurant. I was there for a year, and I'd never, ever worked as hard as I did when I was there. So in my early 20s, I was doing sort of 18-hour days with every other weekend off, earning very, very little. You know, literally working and sleeping and working under immense pressure. And I think that taught me that I could actually stick it, you know, I could work hard and stick at it. So I do think it's important that young people basically throw themselves into things that are way outside their comfort zone to show themselves what they can actually do. Obviously, the other thing that helped me start this business were my sons, because of their need and my motivation to sort out a genuine family problem.
Yeah. What do you think then, or what would you say is the best part in having your own business and the worst or the most difficult part?
So I think the best part of having your own business is that you're spending your life working in something that you really believe in. I think that's a really wonderful privilege. You know, if you can create a successful business that people actually respect and they want to buy your products and they come back and back and back, that's a huge privilege. It's a huge responsibility too, because you never want to disappoint, and you want to improve and improve and improve to make sure that you keep those consumers. So I think that's a really wonderful thing. It gives you a real kick, particularly if you're doing something that changes people's lives. I think that really is a wonderful thing. I think the hardest part of building a business is finding the right people to work in that business and to build a culture that makes the people in your business behave and think and work in a way that you're really proud, because I think that really is success. If you know, you can be very successful on the outside, people can think, wow, what a glossy, wonderful brand, how exciting, but actually the culture inside might not be quite so good, and the people in it might not be adding as much value as you were hoping they were going to. It can be hard to find those resilient people that are really happy to get stuck in, you know, get their sleeves rolled up and just get on with running the business without any egos and without politics. And I think that's a hard one.
Yeah. Has the business plan and the business changed as you've gone on, or did you just, you know, you made a business plan and you kind of determined and set the company culture, and then it's just like been a smooth straight line? I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but I want you to say it.
You know, obviously we put a business plan in place right at the beginning, where there was a huge gap in the market, but we didn't really know how big, and the demand for Genius Bread after we launched was absolutely enormous. I mean, we went from not having sold a single loaf to selling 10,000 loaves a week within 6 months. And we realized very quickly that we were going to run out of capacity. So the business plan at the beginning was guesswork. You know, we thought that the volume of bread we'd be making and selling was a particular number. Well, actually, that number was way off. So I think when you start a business, it's really important to write the business plan, because it forces you to ask lots and lots of questions. And quite often the questions are things that you don't really want to think about, because they make you feel a bit uncomfortable. They might be a bit of a downer on the idea or you might have to change your mind. You know, again, it throws you out of your comfort zone. But it's really, really important to ask all the really difficult questions to validate the idea and validate how you're actually going to take the product to market and who those consumers are going to be. It's really important how you're going to talk to them and how you're going to, what the supply chain will look like, and what margins do you need to be making to make the business wash its face, and, you know, what investment are you going to need? All these things are really important. And the business plan that you put in place might be completely out of date within weeks if your business is doing exceptionally well or is doing not so well, you know, if you've been too optimistic. So it's really important to just keep returning to the business plan, really, you know, on a monthly basis at the beginning, and reviewing and rehashing and changing it, because things do change. The world changes. At the moment, we're seeing the biggest change we've all come across for decades, quite frankly. But this is extreme times. Our business plan now still changes dramatically from year to year. We write an annual operating plan because, again, because the sector is reasonably nascent still, you know, so we launched the first fresh free from product 10 years ago, or 11 years ago now. And each country needs different products. The distribution works differently. You know, products we think are going to do really well in a market crash, products that we're not so hopeful about do exceptionally well. Customers we think, you know, will be fantastically supportive turn out not to be, versus people we didn't really have many hopes for actually turning out to be really great partners. So, you know, the business plan has to flex along with what's going on in the business. And no, there's never been a straight line of everything just going beautifully. It's been a really, really hard ride.
Yeah, so it's okay for it to change a little bit on the way.
You have to, because if you don't flex around what's actually happening, that actually the market is different to what you thought, or your product is being taken up by a different consumer group to the one you predicted, or the product is turning out not to be as successful in the particular area as you thought it was going to be, then you have to change. You have to adapt and think about how else you're going to do it. And each time a problem arises, it's a chance to learn. You know, it's very important to sort of almost welcome the challenge and to learn as you go along.
Yeah. What would you say then for people that are in the beginning of their entrepreneurial journeys and they've come up with a great idea? Is it better to tell people about it and gain as much feedback for it, or should they keep it to themselves and kind of protect it? Or how do you balance that?
It's a really difficult one, particularly if there isn't a huge amount of know-how surrounding the product that you've developed. If there's an IP attached, it's an intellectual property attached, then before you start showing it to people, make sure that you're protecting the way it's made, you know, or something about it that will make it much harder for other people to copy. So always, before you start to share your idea, think about how you can protect it. Sometimes you can't protect it, and so therefore you have to trust your gut feeling and talk to people that you think you can trust. And if you get a bad feeling, if people start to ask you really weird, sort of awkward, searching questions, then they're probably not the best people to talk to about your idea, because they might well be thinking, golly, I wonder if I can do this now. So surround yourself with people you trust. Tell them a certain amount about your offering, but don't give them the full story unless you're feeling confident that you can protect it in some way.
Yeah. Is there anything that you would change from your journey with Genius, or especially in the beginning?
Yeah, so I don't know what I would have done differently, really, because, you know, I came up with the recipe, and I trusted the bakery. I took my recipe to the bakery, and together we you know, scaled it up from my Magi Mix recipe to, you know, to big mixing bowls worth of dough, and together worked out how to process it. If I'd had money behind me, and if I'd had a lot more understanding of how of the ingredients and how the ingredients interacted together in the blend, in the dry blend, then I think the best way of taking my bread recipe to the bakery would have been to turn up with a sack of blended flour and say, right, here you are, I'd like to turn this into a scaled product. But I didn't, you know, it was just me. I didn't have the scientific knowledge of the particular specifications of ingredients, you know, what each ingredient should look like at a molecular level. I didn't have the knowledge of how the ingredients interacted with each other in the mixing bowl. And when I spoke to, you know, experts, none of them knew either, because none of them had ever used the ingredients I did together to make bread. So it was completely new. And it would have been years and years of work to understand what ingredients I needed to put in a sack before I then went to see a bakery. You know, we put a confidentiality agreement in place with the bakery as soon as we could. And really, that had to be good enough. You know, I think when you start a business, you want things to be perfect. You know, if you do value the work that you've done and you want to protect it, then if you can, you absolutely must. But quite often, if people are anything like I was, with no money behind me and without that really important background knowledge, I didn't really have any other choice. And I don't, even now, I don't know how I would do it, because we still don't know enough about our ingredients or the way the mix interacts. It's years and years of work.
Yeah. What do you then think is the kind of the main thing that has made Genius so successful? Is it simply the product? I mean, there's a lot of talk about this, like idea versus execution. Think it was the idea and that you just have such a good recipe and a product, or was it that you executed it well, or a mix of both, or how would you kind of divide it between those two?
I think because it was an entirely new product, and it was a very, very complicated product to make because it contained a whole bunch of different ingredients, and the recipe itself was also really dependent on the process used. And so I think that's really important. So we were, you know, we had about 5 years worth really of space between us and the next competitor coming up with something that was really pretty good. So I think that was really, really important. I think the brand is really important. The fact that we're not, you know, we are just about gluten-free. We're not making normal mainstream wheat bread too. Gluten-free is our reason for being, and so therefore we plow a lot more effort and energy into the products that we make than some of our competitors. And I think we also plow a huge amount of effort into our relationship with our consumers, because, you know, I am a consumer, and, you know, there are many people in our business that are consumers, and we understand the difference the bread makes to people. We're not just in it for, you know, the commercial gain. And our consumers know that. They know we understand them. So I think that a brand has to be truthful and genuine, I think, if consumers are going to stick with it through good times and bad. And we have had many times where our quality has really suffered because of ingredient changes, you know, of equipment behaving differently, of poor management in the bakery. You know, there have been so many things that have affected our product quality, and our consumers are stuck with us in the main.
How do you deal with that kind of not being able to reach perfection? I mean, I don't know if perfection even exists, but kind of like not being able to always please everyone, or things going wrong. How do you deal with that?
Well, it's always devastating, you know, to get a consumer complaint. I mean, it's just not, you know, we want every product to be perfect. But because I suppose we've been learning as we go along, and because we haven't always done things right in the bakery, we have gone through periods where we have received complaints. And the really important thing to do, I think, when you're a brand is to absolutely take the complaints on the chin and be totally humble and apologetic and respond. You know, don't just continue doing a bad job. Respond to the feedback that you're getting. You know, do everything you can to, you know, reverse back into the great product quality that you always plan to achieve. And it might well be that you have to shed products that are making the whole manufacturing piece too complicated. You know, that's a really big problem in manufacturing, where manufacturers just take too much on. And so they start to do everything not as well as they should, because every product will have its challenges, and there's only so much resource to deal with the challenges that you're dealing with. Whereas if you keep manufacturing simpler, then there's a chance that you can keep a really close eye on the few lines that you're making and do a really great job. So we've learned a lot over the years around, you know, okay, this isn't working. What do we do to simplify our business so that the products that we make are as perfect as they can be?
Yeah, so sometimes less is actually more.
Yes, the temptation to just take on more and more and more projects is massive. You know, we were making far too many products because our consumers were saying, what about this, what about that? You know, we want cakes, we want scones, we want naan breads, we want... And before you know it, the challenges have multiplied to a level where you just can't manage all the challenges anymore, and everything starts to fall over. Mm.
Well, what about then? What do you think is your proudest moment that you remember? And do you kind of still take time to celebrate any big or small achievements? Or do you just kind of always just push to the next thing? Or do you think it's important to kind of also pause and think how far you've come?
Yes. So I think my proudest moment really was when I went with my sons to the supermarket and saw the bread sitting on the shelves for the first time, and picking a loaf off the shelf and putting it in our trolley. You know, like every other family buying bread, it felt absolutely incredible to be able to do that, because to get to that stage had taken 4 years. You know, 3 years of development and then a year towards launch, building the brand and negotiating with the supermarkets and building the brand story, etc. It was a 4-year journey to do that. So that has to be my proudest moment. And we do celebrate, you know, our launch date every year.
Oh, that's amazing.
Obviously, 10 years last year was very exciting. And we had a big barbecue at the bakery for everybody to celebrate that. That was really exciting. I think in the past, we've been guilty of not celebrating achievements because we've all been so head down, really firefighting and sort of just reacting to the issues that we were dealing with day in, day out to get great bread out of the door, that we weren't celebrating enough. And that has certainly changed. You know, and as we become much more efficient, it actually frees up time to celebrate the amazing job the team are doing.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I mean, the story is so inspiring, and entrepreneurship is also, I mean, one of my favorite topics. I could just keep talking about it forever and ever, but I think we have to start wrapping this episode up. So to finish off, I still wanted to ask you, and you can take some time to think about it if you want to, but what's one thing that you would like to tell all the aspiring entrepreneurs out there that are listening, and maybe for some reason they fear starting a business, they maybe think they don't have it in them, or is their idea good enough, or are they good enough, and all these doubts, what would you tell them?
It's very easy to prevaricate and to talk about something and never do it. I think if you can find the energy and you have the passion, then you should give it a go and surround yourself with other people who are doing the same. It's incredible how people can talk you out of starting your own business, because those people are scared of this idea of you bringing so much uncertainty on yourself and possibly uncertainty on them if they're your family or your friends. People get threatened by independent souls who want to do their own thing. So make sure that you surround yourself with kindred spirits who are on the same journey as you, because that's exceptionally energizing, it's inspiring, and it gives you a chance to share those very intensive first few months of trying to shape what your business is going to be together with people who are in it as well. I think that's important. And so therefore, getting involved in programs, entrepreneurship programs, is actually an exceptionally good idea.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And also kind of, yeah, if you don't have the money necessarily to hire employees or people in the beginning, which often is the case, then it's still possible to find mentors and, you know, other entrepreneurs from these accelerators or programs and different communities to still support you on the way and be kind of your entrepreneurial
family. Absolutely. Yes, I would say don't talk about it. Do something about it. Get on with it. I never forget a friend of mine saying I was going to write my second book. And I'd been talking about writing it for ages. And she just said, listen, just stop talking about it. Why don't you just do it? And that was really what spurred me into writing my second book. You know, I said, yeah, of course, I've been talking about this for ages and I've done nothing about it. And I think that that's the thing to do. Just get on with it. Just do it.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the perfect note to end this episode on. So thank you so much for coming and sharing your knowledge and your experiences.
That's a pleasure, Bettine. Well, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. And so which all countries can people go out to the supermarket and buy Genius products if they're now interested and they haven't tried it before?
Well, Genius products are available in France and Germany and Holland and across Scandinavia. They're also available in Australia, in the US, and in some areas of the Middle East. So we're reasonably well distributed.
And then to also tell our listeners that they can also follow Genius on social media at Genius Gluten Free. I mean, I love your Instagram account. It's so fun and vibrant. So if you don't have access to the products, at least you can connect on social media.
Well, that would be fantastic. Yeah.
Well, I mean, thank you so much, Lucinda, for coming. And is there anything else you'd like to still add?
Well, no, thank you, Bettina. And I just wish you all the best with your wonderful business. I know it's going to be a fantastic success. Once we get over this little hurdle, it's going to do really well. So all the very best to you and to your colleagues who are also building their businesses.
Thanks so much, Lucinda. And I will be back with a new episode for you guys listening next week.